You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
What is up, everybody, and welcome to the All-NBA Show, part of the All-City Podcast Network. I'm your host, Adam Mott. His legs is off today. He is on the road for the rest of the week. He'll be back next week, but we got the next best thing from the PHNX Suns and also the general manager of PHNX. It's Saul Bookman. Saul, what's going on, brother?
What's going on, man? How you doing?
I'm good, man. Not as good as you after watching the Suns last night. They're in a little bit of a groove. I can't get a read on them, so I got to get the read on them from you.
Oh, brother, you and I both. Like, I don't think anybody can get a read on them. I think everybody nationally knows that this team is just the most confounding team of all time, it feels like. Yeah. But I'm sure we'll get into that in a second.
We'll get into all of it. On the Today Show, we're going to do a quick speed run of some of the stuff last night because we got to talk about a very bizarre 50-piece, but we're going to spend a majority on it on the Phoenix Suns, the Suns-Cavs game last night, but really on the Suns and their where they're at heading into the playoffs, what makes them work, who you're afraid of, who you want to see in the playoffs, all those things. And then later in the show, Devon Givens of PHLY is going to join and talk about Joel Embiid's return. But first, we are presented, as always, by DraftKings Sportsbook. Stay tuned because you'll hear more about DraftKings and all it has to offer throughout the show. DraftKings, the crown is yours. All right, last night in the NBA, we had a bizarre one because Malachi Flynn goes for 50 points. If you told me, honestly, there's 350 players in the NBA, and if you told me somebody scored 50 in the association last night, honest to God, I would have named 300 people before I got to Malachi Flynn. I actually think it's the single craziest 50-piece of my lifetime. And there's a hand few that have happened that have been bizarre, but this one to me is the most bizarre, Saul.
Especially when you see he's the only the third player in the history of the game to score 50 plus points off the bench. And the other two, Nick Anderson and Jamal Crawford. I mean,
right. Who you think of?
Just incredible. I didn't expect the Washington State product, who came from the Toronto Raptors, to drop a 50-piece randomly. That's definitely unexpected.
Who's the Phoenix Suns version of Malachi Flynn?
I would have said Landry Shamet if he was still here.
Yeah, that's a Landry Shamet for sure. But it might be Bol Bol, which, like, Bol Bol could get hot, man. That guy could start making threes. But if we get a Bol Bol 50-piece, Adam Silver's going to have to come down and make some new rule adjustments.
Oh, dude, if we get a bowl 50-piece, I think the entire NBA is going to blow up, dude. Everybody's going to go crazy.
It'd be the most watched NBA video of all time. Yeah, we have – so Caris LeVert has scored 50. He's a scorer, though. He's not like – you don't think he has 50-piece in him, but at least that's what he does. He scores. And then you got Andre Miller. If you remember, Andre Miller once put up a 50-piece on 22 of 31 shooting. He's not a scorer. But he's way better than Malachi Flynn. Like, that one's not as crazy to me as Malachi Flynn.
Yeah, but I mean, Andre Miller wasn't like a shooter, right? Like, he was just kind of like a playground scorer, you know? Yeah. And so it actually kind of surprised me that Andre Miller ever dropped a 50 piece in a game because he just was so methodical about his game. There was nothing that sped up about him. So I think I could see a scenario where Malachi Flynn could score more because Malachi Flynn can score. Yeah, I mean, he can score. He can shoot. He's a good player. I didn't expect a 50-piece.
He's in the Terrence Ross category to me. Like, Terrence Ross also has the 50-piece. And you're like, yeah, he can shoot. He can get hot. You can envision a day where he was just the hottest he's ever been, and he gets to 50. Tony Delk, I don't know if you remember this one. Oh, yeah. He had a 50-piece. He's 6'1". He had a 50-piece with no three-pointers. That is the only one on this list that I would look at and say, okay, that one's close to the Malachi Flynn one.
I believe that was with Phoenix, yeah?
Was it really? I just have the list here that I had to look up.
I think they were playing the Kings, and he dropped a 50-piece on them. Yeah, yeah. I mean, Tony Delk was – listen, man, I love Tony. Yeah. Tony Delk is one of my favorite Suns of all time. So
there you go. And then Corey Brewer, he dropped a 50-piece one time. Same thing. He's in the Terrence Ross category where he scores, but he scores like 18. So to get 50 was out of the blue. But Malachi Flynn, salute to you in a losing effort, but Malachi Flynn now joins a long distinguished list of NBA stars to get 50 points. The Blazers beat the Hornets. And I know that you're probably asking, like, why are we bringing this one up? This time of year, you do get the tankathon standings. And this game could have tied them in the standings and would have actually made a meaningful impact on the odds of who gets the number one overall pick or a top three pick. And instead, the Blazers win this one. They eke it out in a real barn burner, 89-86. I did not watch this game, but when I see 89-86 against two teams that desperately want to lose, I go, okay, that was a rough watch for whoever paid for that one.
Oh, man, that's brutal, man. That's a brutal, brutal game. I feel sorry for any Hornets fans that had to drag themselves through that, or Blazers fans, for that matter. It feels like they both tried to tank, yep, and it didn't work, you know?
As a result, Portland now has just a 10% chance at the number one overall pick. Charlotte maintains a 13.3. I don't know how big of a deal 3.3% is in the standings, but clearly both teams thought it was a big enough deal to roll out the rosters they did.
How many games do the Hornets have left against the Bucks? Because they can beat the Bucks. Apparently, every minimal team can beat the Bucks right now.
Well, that glad you brought it up, because the Bucks fall to the Memphis Grizzlies last night. So you are right. This one did feature Giannis, did not feature Dame. Man, there's a lot of teams in the NBA this year. Phoenix, one of them. We'll get to it. But there's a lot of these teams that I'm like, they are good. I don't care what happens. They are good teams, but they keep doing stuff like this. And Milwaukee last night losing to Memphis at home, by the way. This game was in Milwaukee. Like, I just a couple weeks ago said Milwaukee might be my sleeper pick. I think I might pick them just because I'm not fully buying Boston. And then they do stuff like this to me and make me look like an idiot.
Again, yeah, you're right. In terms of like confusing teams, the only thing that I can always point to is a Doc Rivers team is going to be an inconsistent team. Like that's just, yeah, that's his MO. That's been his MO, yeah, ever since the Boston championship 2008. So I'm not surprised, but I'm surprised because of the talent that they do have. I kind of tend to agree with you. If there was anybody that was going to be a threat to the Celtics, it should be the Bucks, because of that three-man game that they have, but they're so inconsistent. We see them beat the brakes off of Phoenix one day, and then the next game they lose to the Hornets. Like, what are we doing here?
Yeah. So losing by 10 at home to the Grizzlies and getting blown out in the fourth quarter is a major red flag for them. They also have the Celtics destroyed the Thunder. The Thunder have been missing some guys. Here's the story on the Thunder, Saul. All year they've been healthy, like super healthy, and they've been the one seed. They might fumble, or the one or two seed. They've been the two seed for most of it. They might fumble it down the stretch just with a little bit of health issues. Like, you just go unhealthy for 1 week at the wrong time, and all of a sudden you go from 1-3.
Yeah, OKC to me feels very matchup dependent in the playoffs anyway. I feel like, you know, if they played the Suns, to be honest with you, that's a tough matchup for the Suns because of their youth and their athleticism. And obviously Shea is just a mismatch for anybody. But there's other teams that I feel like they do not fare well against. So when you're looking at the overall landscape, like, I don't think they match up really well with the Denver Nuggets, in my opinion, because they don't have anybody that can stop Jokic. And if you have somebody like Jokic, you're kind of screwed. So they're them in Minnesota. Like, I don't think everybody in the league is really believers in those two in terms of like surefire championship contenders, because they got to see it to believe it in the playoffs. But OKC to me would have the upper edge because of Shea. I think Shea is the best player in the Western Conference outside of Jokic right now. So
that's interesting, because I think I'd go the other way. I kind of buy the Timberwolves, and they had a 50-point win last night over the G League Raptors. But I just buy Minnesota. I think they can do the thing that I'm most confident will translate to the playoffs, which is defend.
They can defend, but we've seen it before. If you stretch them out and you take Rudy to the outside, he's cooked. He's cooked. Yeah. And that's what teams do in the playoffs. They just try to exploit his mismatch. That's why last year in that five-game series that you guys had against them, like, it was a mismatch. Jokic could just do whatever he wanted against Rudy because he couldn't do anything. So if you have a good big, you're probably going to do fairly well, especially if that big can shoot from the outside against Rudy Gobert. Now, if you don't have a big, the Suns, to me, fare very well against the Timberwolves. And we saw them beat them by 30 points early in the season. They play them tomorrow. I am going to tell you right now, the Suns are probably going to win that game by 20-plus points, because I feel like they match up very well against the Timberwolves.
That we're going to get, that's like a nice tease for what's coming up here in just a minute. But the other two games, really quickly to speed through them, the Pacers lost to the Nets. This is a little bit like the Milwaukee situation where you're losing to a team that's no longer motivated to win. And the Pacers, the biggest category, if you put all these teams into categories, you know, juggernaut or, you know, this or that, the biggest category is like they should be better than they are. And the Suns, I think, find themselves in that category. But the Pacers dropping to the Nets this late in the season and a game they kind of needed to have is a really big red flag. And then the last one for me, this one's really interesting. The Magic beat the Pelicans and kind of dominated them. And we talked about the Pelicans. They've been slipping just a little bit here over the last week. But the big story to me on this one I actually did have to check out a little bit. Banchero really outplayed Zion. And that to me is a little bit surprising because those guys are in a similar category to me of these young, really up and coming, dominant guys. But Zion should be further along in development and impact and all those things. And last night, Banchero kind of dwarfed him and outplayed him. And again, without having seen, again, I didn't prep you to see this game or anything. You know, we talk about Zion, and if you're buying the Pelicans, you're buying him as this dominant force. But last night was one of those games where I go, man, there's players that he should dominate that he doesn't every time.
Banchero's a better player, in my opinion, than Zion Williamson. I just think he's got a better all-around game than Zion. Zion struggles. You know, we saw the other night he couldn't shoot free throws to save his life. Yeah. He struggles to shoot from the outside, and he's pretty much a dominant drive to the basket, low post kind of player. And, you know, he can be limited. If you have the right kind of attack against him, he can be limited. Now, you got to be physical as all hell against him because he's such a big beast. But and Banchero's got the physicality too. Banchero's not a small guy by any stretch of the imagination. He can hold up physically against guys like Zion, and he's got a nice all around game. He can hit you from the mid range. He can hit outside from time to time. You know, he can drive to the basket. So it doesn't surprise me that Banchero got the best of that matchup. What does surprise me is how fast New Orleans seems like they are falling off.
Yeah,
quickly too. And so I don't think the Pelicans will end up in that top six range. I think somebody else is going to sneak up in there.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com.
Well, that's good news for the Phoenix Suns, the team we're going to go deep on now, the team you cover here. So last night they get the win over the Cavs, kind of kicked their butt. It got a little bit close, I guess you could say. It was like false close in the third quarter when the Cavs made their run. But here's the thing that stood out. 72 points in the first half for the second straight game. They have done that 11 times now, which is the Boston Celtics have done it 17 times, scored 70 or more in the first half. Sacramento, Milwaukee, and Indiana have each done it 13 times. And then right behind them is the Phoenix Suns with the 11 times. This is the thing that we forget about the Phoenix Suns. When you were walking into the season, you know, weren't necessarily buying the depth, the defense, the pieces all fitting. What you were buying is they could put up 70 points in any game and probably will do it a lot. And they did it a lot early on. Now that they've done it two in a row, here's my question. It's only been a two-game streak here, but this two games, the offense looks like what I envisioned the best version of them being. Like, that looks like what I expected. A lot of that's Devin Booker. But where do you rank their offense right now in terms of it being actualized to your expectations?
If I had to grade it, I'd probably say it's at about a B because I still think that there's room for improvement. I don't think we've seen a game, maybe once, where the big three, quote-unquote, all played at a really high level. I think Bradley Beal right now defers a little too much for my liking. I think he has opportunities to score, and he's trying to be that facilitator as well. So he's kind of – it's not like he's learning on the job because he's been in that position before, but with this group of players, specifically KD and Book, he's never really had that. And so deferring to other guys, like last night, he made this nice move against Jared Allen and did his typical step back, and he had like 10-foot of space. And he jumped for the shot and then ended up throwing it into the corner. I'm like, bro, that's a good high percentage shot. Why didn't you not shoot that? It's because he's trying to overpass from time to time. So I think Bradley Beal's really the threshold and really the potential that could be maximized if you're looking at Phoenix. KD and Book, I'll say this right now. If KD and Book play the way they did last night, they can beat anybody in the league any given night. And that's the thing about Phoenix is if you get – you saw last year in games 3 and 4 against the Nuggets, Devin Booker was out of his mind in those two games, and they won two games. And so, like, they easily could pull that off. It's just, can you get that consistently in a seven-game series? I've always thought the threshold was 75 points amongst the big three. Last night they got 79, and Bradley Beal only contributed 7 of those. So I'm optimistic about their growth, but I'm also pessimistic because their consistency has been trash, and I have not been on board with that. I don't understand why they're so inconsistent. And even with that all being said, it was brought up last night on our show, they've won 7 out of the last 10. It feels like they win and lose like every other game. But somehow, some way, they've won 7 out of 10, 2 in a row, and now they're heading into a stretch where, legitimately, they got Minnesota. Then they have the Pelicans. They win those two games. They're probably looking at a 5 seed. And if anybody falters, there's a scenario, Adam, where after all this, they could somehow find their way to the 4 spot, which would be insane. I don't think that's going to happen, but that would just be insane after this topsy-turvy season.
I love your stat, though. I'm going to run with it. I like this idea of 75 points for the big three because I think there's something to it. Have you looked it in, by the way? Is there like a – do you know what their win-loss record is when they hit that mark?
You know what? I'm going to go looking for that today. Yeah. I have not. It's just it's a Saul Bookman metric. It's not really a statistical category that I really looked at research. Yeah, it's a feel. But I feel pretty good in saying that if they've had 75 points in games, I'm going to say that they have a really, really good record. So I'll research that and throw that your way.
I think you're right about Bradley Beal, though, here. And Legs actually brought this up when we talked about the Suns either earlier this week or maybe it was last week about as much as if the team's winning. And look, 32 assists last night's a huge indicator for me as well because I don't think the ball movement is consistently good in Phoenix. I think there's things teams can do to really stymie the ball movement. If they get 32 assists last night, that's a good bellwether for their success. But I do think that they're going to need Bradley Beal to be able to press his advantage. They got 122 points last night. I understand if somebody's inclination is to say, what are you complaining about? They scored 72 in the first half. They got 122. But in the postseason, you do want all those guys to be a little more comfortable with where it is that they fit in. Do you feel – so with Bradley Beal, you know, he's not scoring. I think it's been something like 10 games or something like that where he hasn't scored 20 points. Do you think that he is comfortable with that? And has he talked about this? Or do you think it is actually a level of discomfort that he is getting that low of point totals?
I don't think it's a level of discomfort. I think he's just trying to be a good teammate right now, and he's trying to be, you know, listen, one of those big three had to take a step back in order for the other two to get theirs. And if you're looking at scoring, and I'm talking about like shooting specifically, Kevin Durant and Devin Booker are not going to be deferred to, or you're not going to go away from those guys. Bradley Beal's a good scorer, but he relies heavily on getting into the paint, getting touches at the rim, and he's not really a volume three-point shooter. He's got a decent mid-range, so it's not like, you know, he's some slouch. But Devin Booker can give you a 65-70% outing shooting-wise any given night. Same thing with Kevin Durant. And both of those guys are two of the most efficient shooters of all time. So you're not going to defer from those guys. So I think that's what Bradley's trying to figure out is what's his role, what's his level of aggression. In terms of attack, I think Bradley is a little bit more – he's better suited for this offense to do what they're asking him to do because he can get into the paint better and more effectively than Devin Booker can. Devin Booker has really increased his value in terms of being an overall playmaker, but I still think his peak value is as a scorer. And so you don't want to take that away from Devin Booker. You don't want to take that away from Kevin Durant. And you don't want to ask Kevin Durant to be a playmaker, in my estimation. You need him to score. Because when Kevin Durant tries to be a playmaker, sometimes that's where I feel like he gets into trouble with the turnovers and things of that nature. Now, he can do it, but I just don't feel like that's his strong suit. Let him score. Let him be efficient. Let him take advantage of the defense. And let Bradley Beal kind of facilitate that. But again, to your point, Bradley Beal's got to be aggressive. He still has to have that alpha mentality within the concept of the team and basketball. So when the opportunity presents itself, he can attack. If he comes passive at any point in time in the playoffs, teams will start to notice that and they'll take advantage. And then you're going to have to tell Bradley Beal in the middle of a third quarter, hey, man, you got to start scoring. And that's going to be a shift to what he's been doing. And that's what I don't like about it.
I think the perfect thing would be if he plays like that in, say, a game one and two, maybe you split, maybe you win both of them if you're Phoenix. And then game three, teams over adjust, and he has the exact right, okay, now it's my time. They put the weaker defender on me. They're rotating harder. But to the point we made earlier, I should look up. Emma, look up for me real quick. How many games in a row has he been below 20 points? Because you would feel better if it was like, okay, the same scoring average, but every fourth game he did that. Right now, it's like it's been like 10 in a row that he hasn't done it. And I think that's one of the things that maybe concerns you. And you just said with KD about being a playmaker. I don't think it's playmaker versus not playmaker. I think it's initiator. I think that's the way I would put it. Kevin Durant can playmake when the ball kicks out to him and now he's attacking a scramble defense and he's in his comfort zone. But when you have him initiate the offense, to me, that's when teams can hard trap. He's not necessarily great at moving the pieces around to really maximize that trap, make the defense overcommit or what have you. And so that to me is where I think he has a little bit of a weakness. This is also,
I do want to say this. I think that's the ultimate failure of what the Suns were trying to do earlier in the season and really through the first 60 games is that they weren't setting him up for success, basically. Yeah. You know, they were trying to get him to adapt and get out of these coverages and things of that nature. And that's not really his strongest suit. So why continue to go to that time after time after time again? The ISO ball sometimes in the fourth quarter, that's why they're one of the worst fourth quarter teams of all time. Like, and that's the Achilles heel for this team. It's because they kept trying to do the same thing over and over and over again, and it just wasn't working, and it wasn't progressing either. So they had to stop at some point, and they had to go a different direction. That's what they've done right now, and I agree with you. Like, initiator is a great way to put it, yeah. I mean, the fact that you don't want him to do that. You want him to be able to play make, but in his own style, in his own way, while setting him up for success.
Well, here's why I think it's an important topic, is from a Denver perspective last year, one of the things that turned the series was Denver decided to start, and KCP was the one that thought of this. He said, Devin Booker is so important to them, both as a scorer, he's obviously cooking us, but also as the team's lead initiator. So KCP started full court pressing him every game, not because he could get steals or turnovers, but just because it's like, you know what, do this for four quarters. And if you're still making shots in the fourth quarter, then we'll tip our hat. And of course he tailed off from that point on. He also got injured. So maybe that was part of it. I think that has to be every team strategy number one now in the postseason against Phoenix is, hey, we got to wear Devin Booker down. He carries too much responsibility for this team as a scorer that we have to just wear him down so that they can't rely on him late in games. But my question to you is, are they better equipped to handle that specific adjustment from a team this year?
I think they are. I think they are. I mean, let's remind ourselves about last year in that Denver series. You know, Chris Paul gets hurt in that second game. And, you know, I know a lot of Phoenix fans will say, like, oh, we would have won that game. I mean, you could always say that until the cows come home. But the fact remains, Chris Paul getting hurt in the playoffs is like death and taxes. It just happens every single year. You got to expect that to happen. So Bradley Beal, listen, it's not like Bradley Beal's the healthiest guy ever either. But I do think he's physically a lot more, he's quicker, stronger, younger, and he's going to be able to adjust to whatever variants a defense will throw Devin Booker's way. And that's, again, the Bradley Beal aggression, to me, is the key to the entire playoff run, whatever that's going to look like. If Bradley Beal is aggressive, he attacks, he picks his spots while also facilitating and playmaking, he's going to be – this team can go to a whole nother level. But we haven't really seen that yet. And I don't know if we're going to see that by the time we get to the playoffs. Devin Booker, in my estimation, you forget sometimes because he hasn't had the greatest of seasons in his own standards. He had a little bit of a rough stretch, and in two games ago, I think he had like 14 points in a game, and it just looked a little off. And then he goes to New Orleans, and it feels like New Orleans is always the get right place for him. Goes there, drops 52 last night. He has 40. Like you can see playoff Devin coming back. And so if he's going to have to play at that level. If this team's going to go far, Kevin Durant and Devin Booker are going to have to play insane. They just are. If they, because the test was and the threshold was championship. It's always been like that for the Suns. And in the last 3 months, I wasn't a believer that they could do it. I still have hesitation in even saying that they're a contender. I just need them to get to the playoffs and see what happens. Because, you know, our guy Flex says all the time, he says he's been pretty persistent saying that he thinks that this team is better suited for the playoffs and a 7-game series than a game-to-game 82-game schedule. That remains to be seen. I'm interested with that perspective, though.
I think I agree with it. I don't – it's funny. I think they are more suited to a 7-game series than they are the regular season, but I think they are less suited to a 16 – or a 4-round playoffs than they are to a 7-game series, if that makes sense. Which means, I think Phoenix can beat anybody in the NBA. I don't think they can beat everybody in the NBA. I don't know that they can do that 4 times in a row because of the inconsistency, which to me is a little bit built into their identity, into their DNA. I don't know that they can be a consistent team by the makeup of how they play, and there's not like perfect harmony and connection between what they're trying to accomplish. I will say, to the point about bringing the ball up, oftentimes you just need somebody to dribble up. It's not even like point guard. You just need somebody to dribble it across half court and then get into your stuff. And that saves your energy. And Bradley Beal clearly can do that. And that's one reason I think that the full court press and wear down Devin Booker strategy is not going to work in the playoffs this year. Let's go into it though now. Let's talk about the play-ins. So if they fall to the play-in, how would you feel about a 7-8 matchup against the Pelicans?
I'd feel pretty good about that. Especially if it was in New Orleans. I just don't feel like they would lose in New Orleans. Yeah. I just feel like Devin, there's something about that arena that fits Devin Booker's eye. Like he loves that arena. He kills it every single time. So I feel pretty good about that series. If it's at home, I don't know. We'll see. Sunday they come here. And we'll see how that matchup looks like. But I feel pretty good against the Pelicans. I'm not too worried about them.
Real quickly, how about the Kings?
Yeah, I'm not worried about the Kings.
They're injured?
They're struggling right now. You know, Malik Monk is out, I think. And then Kevin Huerter is out. And it feels like the dream season from last year. I said at the beginning of this year, season, I was not a believer in the Kings. I didn't think that they were going to be a top five contender. And that's playing exactly out the way I thought it would. I'm not concerned about the Kings. The one team that I'm worried about if we had to face them, and I think everybody's worried about matching up with these two teams in some regard, is just because of their history, because of the players that they have, and that's the Lakers or the Warriors. Like, on any given night, those two teams could play out of their minds and beat you. The Lakers own the series on the Suns this year. The Warriors beat the Suns the last time they played. And they have that championship DNA. You never know what they're going to bring to the table. So those are the two teams that will cause me hesitation. The other two, not so much.
And real quickly, because I know you got to get out of here, if they do get the 6th seed and they end up playing one of the top three, Thunder, Wolves, Nuggets, who would you prefer? It sounds like the Wolves.
Yeah, the Wolves. 1,000,000% the Wolves. I think – I don't know. You tell me. I think Nuggets fans don't really want to see Phoenix. I feel like – that's cool and all, but I don't really feel like in the regular season that really means much. I don't really want to see the Nuggets in the playoffs. So I think the Wolves are the better matchup. I think they would dog walk the Minnesota Timberwolves. I'm not a believer in the Timberwolves. I love Ant. I think he's phenomenal. I just don't think that the sum of their parts is going to be able to compete with the high-level scoring that this trio should be able to provide in the playoffs.
I think that's the matchup I want most. Minnesota versus Phoenix. It's fascinating. It's such a complete opposite. Like, and that's what makes for good matchup. So there you go. The Suns are one of those teams. I think Denver is the better team than the Suns, but of the teams that are, in my opinion, not as good as Denver, the Suns are the most likely to beat them. Just for what I said, their variance is so high and they just get hot and there's nothing you can do about it. So great stuff. Everybody check out the PHNX Suns podcast. They're following that team 5 times a week. With live shows after every game. Thanks so much, Saul.
Thanks, Adam. Appreciate you, man.
All right, let's take a break. On the other side, another fascinating team. The Philadelphia 76ers, who got Joel Embiid back, got a win, and now are they back in the title contention? We got Devon Givens on the other side. First, let me tell you guys about the Game Time app. Maybe you're trying to get to a game. It's Thursday. You're starting to make plans. You want to get to a game this weekend. Maybe you want to go to a concert, festival, or event. Or maybe you don't even know what's going on in your neck of the woods and you want to see what is going on in my area. Well, just hop on the Game Time app and scroll through all of the events, sporting, festival, or otherwise, and find out what the prices are for each event. They have flash deals, zone deals, last-minute tickets. So even if you're late to the party, you see something going on in an hour and you haven't even left the home yet, just hop on there. You can get a great flash deal, last-minute ticket, and then head on in. They also have that great feature where it says at the very top right, all-in pricing. You click on that, and you're not surprised by fees, by taxes, or anything else. You know exactly what the price is going to be when hit checkout. It's really easy to use, really easy to navigate. And like I said, it's a great way for you to find out what's going on in your area. So download the Game Time app, create an account, and use code ALLNBA for $20 off your first purchase. Again, create an account and redeem code ALLNBA for $20 off. Last minute tickets, lowest prices guaranteed. Also want to tell you about the presenting sponsor of this show. The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here. The Final Four, finally, with my guy DJ Burns. DraftKings Sportsbook is one of America's top-rated sportsbook app, and they're giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college bet. So if you want to get completely reckless and bet on NC State to win the tournament this weekend, might as well throw a no-sweat bet, $5. And even if you're wrong, which you're almost certainly to be, you're going to win $150 instantly in bonus bets. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code ALLNBA. That same code every time, ALLNBA. New customers get $150 instantly in bonus bets whenever you lay down a $5 bet on DraftKings Sportsbook with code ALLNBA. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
All right, back here, segment two of the All-NBA show, and now making his debut on the All-NBA show, PHLY Sixers podcast legend Devon Givens. Devon, how are you doing, brother?
Adam, I'm good, man. How are you?
I'm good. I'm not as good as you got to be, though, because it was a rough 2 months for you to get through with the 76ers over the last 2 months, but it seems like there is some hope along the way. What is the general vibe right now for you personally, but also for the show, the Sixers show right now with Embiid returning?
Yeah, so for me first, just to begin there, you're right. The 2 months were very rough, having to sit back and having the history of injuries over the course of Joel Embiid's career in the postseason. It has been rough to see that while things got off to the start that they did, looking really, really good for the Philadelphia 76ers, and seeing them compete against Boston, Denver, Milwaukee, and some of the other top teams in the league and faring well in those matchups, to see it once again happen and to happen where it generally happens that way with some fluke things with Joel Embiid, where the injury occurs and it keeps him out for an extended period of time. Hasn't really been this long, but to have to sit back and watch, and at one point, I bring it up on the show with Kyle and Derek. At one point, the Sixers were 29-13 before things started to go the other way and that backslide started to happen, especially with Embiid missing a game, the Denver game, coming back for Golden State on January 30th, and that being his final game and having to sit out those 2 months. Again, they were a very good team. They were talked about amongst the best in the league for a very good reason. The acceleration, of course, of what Tyrese Maxey has done and establishing himself as one of the better young players in the league, making his first All-Star team, and the full complement of really good complementary players, role players, around those two All-Stars to have this team compete in this league. So with them having to now go for those 2 months without Joel Embiid, us looking at the schedule every week and seeing what it's going to look, where can you find some here? What Derek went through at one point, 23 game stretch, can you get 8-10 here, right? And that's because we were forecasting the play-in tournament. And yeah. Orlando, Cleveland being very good. New York, the same thing. You expect Boston and Milwaukee to be up at the top. But what are these other teams that we have to watch and look out for? And as a result, we're sitting there, we're watching. Then Maxey misses some time. Tobias Harris misses time. Kelly Oubre misses some time. De'Anthony Melton's back issues flare up once again where he's out for an extended period of time. The trade happens, signing Kyle Lowry and trying to figure out how this team is going to exist without Embiid. And then just a simple question, Adam, of when he does come back, is he going to be right? And how will he be able to function on that knee with that meniscus issue and him coming back and being able to cement them once again as a contender? And it was rough. It was, you could tell the vibes were different once again when the buzz was there for him making the road trip, two-game road trip that they had, Cleveland and Toronto, the idea that maybe he could play in one of those two, he did not play. And then knowing that, because we know him, nationally televised game on a Tuesday night, why not make that debut there, get back and show that, hey, I'm back and we're going to have another opportunity. So the buzz was different. The vibe was different. I did not go to the arena that night, but Kyle and Derek were there. But even watching it on television, I'm sure if you watched it, you could feel it. Just the, you know, again, just to have that hovering back over, the cloud was no longer dark. Right. it was something with a little bit of partly cloudy of that cloud there. And hopefully it gets a little bit more sunny going forward.
You're right that he brings an energy. Like, there's not that many players in the league that bring an energy to a fan base like an individual player. You know, there's only a handful, and Embiid is definitely in the S tier of players. That's like when he's there, the whole fan base feels a little bit different about things. But let's rewind real quick, because I want to talk about Tyrese Maxey. So they go 11-21. If you count the Denver game, which was the first game, you know, they miss, he comes back in that in the game he gets hurt. But let's pretend all of those count as the non-Embiid games. I believe they went 11-21 over that stretch. And my big thought when Embiid goes down was, Maxey, I think, is ready for this because he played so well at the start of the year. He played well, you know, for the first month, and I thought, okay, he might have something in here to steady it. But to your point, he missed 9 games. A bunch of other guys missed 9 games. And when you're already missing your star, you're extra thin, and everything else is like double in what it hurts you when you're missing a guy. But with Maxey, I still feel like he underperformed my expectation during that stretch. And I'm curious what you think about his development as a guy that's able to carry a team in that way.
Felt like he was able to get some and to perform decently enough in some of those games. Give them a chance in others where you expect your supporting cast, I'm looking at you, Tobias Harris, mainly, of being able to withstand some of the things that he is now being thrown at as a number one in this role while Embiid is out. And then the supporting cast stepping up in a way where he does his part, but you steal it with those others. So I don't think really, Adam, many of us here looked at him as a clear-cut number one who can hold it down for those games that you're talking about. Let's just put those 32 there in that box where he was going to go and flip that and have them at 21-11. If anything, maybe a 500 team. Right. But again, he missed some time during that time. And then you also couple that with others underperforming in their roles. They had some close games that they lost that they were unable to execute down the stretch. Defensively, they were a mess because Joel Embiid is the anchor of that. And then once again, we cannot ignore the fact that during the time where, yes, Patrick Beverley was there, he has had games. They had a really good game against Boston. They lost, though. In the end, they lost. Had some other close games where they were in those, where you look at them and say, they had no business being in this game. Maxey did his part. Beverley maybe overplayed for what he is. Kelly Oubre, the same thing, but you're still missing another ball handler in De'Anthony Melton. That's a double-digit score. Is also one of your better perimeter defenders on your team. And you're playing also with Robert Covington now being out for 2+ months because of a bone bruise in his knee that has kept him off the floor. That was also part of your rotation. The same where you have Marcus Morris playing meaningful minutes. He gets traded. He's now out of the rotation. You don't really replace that because you still have people out. So while I hope it doesn't seem like for the viewers, at least, that, oh, Devon's making excuses. No, these are real things that happen for every team.
Totally.
And just to kind of go back to the Maxey piece, double teams coming at him. They're getting the ball out of his hands way beyond the three-point line, and he can't get the basketball back. They're throwing some length at him in different times where he doesn't really handle those all that great sometimes. But for the most part, just to kind of wind it all the way back, he wasn't the number one that, you know, I'm sorry that you had to look at it that way, where maybe that, again, that number would have been 21 and 11 instead of the 11 and 21. I just don't think he was ready, quite ready for that to be 10 games over 500 and a big time sample size there with Embiid out of the lineup. So if he had played a little bit more, like there was a stretch, Adam, where he missed the four games and they played Brooklyn, they lost, they played Memphis, they lost. They won the other two. Had he been in those games, they were probably winnable games that they may have won. Now, they may not have won the other two, but at least for those, maybe they would have won one of the other two, and they would have had a 3-1 record during that four-game stretch. So you know how it goes, and you know how it balances out, where the flow of a schedule, how you're playing, who you're playing at that time also, and how some of that stuff might work. Because we did see them beat Cleveland, and he was on the floor. Buddy Hield had a really good stretch. Buddy Hield has since taken a bit of a dive where the arrow is pointing down for him in terms of what he has been doing. And so all of those things, for me, factor into where they have been without Embiid, partially because of what Maxey was doing, was not doing, and then being out of the lineup. And how this team is really, really built around Maxey and Embiid together.
Well, that's the question I want to ask you, because I thought early in the year, like the first month of the season, I was looking at this and I go, okay, this is the formulation of a real two-man game. Because in my opinion, I think it's very hard to win in today's NBA with one superstar who does individual superstar things. I think you need a two-man action to win in the postseason. And I thought the first month that was very promising. I was like, man, these guys, this might actually be the perfect two guys to build that type of chemistry. I thought as the season went on, it tilted more and more towards Embiid's comfort zone, which is Embiid as the central figure and Maxey almost fading a little bit to the around, you know, playing around Embiid. Now that they're back and there's this short runway, what do you think of the chemistry? If I told you Philadelphia is going to win or lose in the playoffs based on the chemistry of the two-man game between those two guys, where do you think that's at? And do you say, hey, I think they're ready for that?
I do believe they're ready for that. And the reason why, number one, is because Embiid encourages Tyrese Maxey to be just what you're asking, to be that player. Oftentimes, we know Joel Embiid is a franchise player. Tyrese Maxey is the second best player. Hands down, that's cemented. He's going to get his contract in the offseason to be that guy. And oftentimes, after a big Tyrese Maxey game, maybe even a couple of big shots in the fourth quarter where they really have been carried by both of them, but Embiid being the focal point to what you're laying out there, he calls Tyrese Maxey the franchise. And he does that for a reason, because he's constantly on him to be that. And if you go back to when Jimmy Butler was here for that 70-plus games during that season that they were knocked out in the second round, there's always this clip that's circulating of Jimmy Butler mic'd up and telling Embiid to take us home. We know when Joel Embiid was the best player, the leaders, though, were Jimmy Butler and J.J. Redick on that particular team. But to get that out of your best player, still Embiid in this case, but trying to push that second guy into Tyrese Maxey, who James Harden even talked about when he was here. He is the nicest guy, and sometimes I wish he would stop smiling on the court and just be a killer because he's nice. But you know what? He does that with a smile on his face, and it still works. And that two-man game that you're talking about, his point guard game has improved. The pocket passes have improved on those pick and pops that we have seen for so many years with James Harden for that year and a half, now Tyrese Maxey, and others in the past where that has worked to a T, because as you talked about, Joel Embiid, right there in that elbow area, 15 to 17 feet, that's a layup for that jump shot, and that's his money right there. So while they did get back to that a lot, you're absolutely right, Adam, playing off of that with that dribble handoff, with that pick and pop between those two, Tyrese Maxey would have those quarters where he would have those double-digit scoring quarters where he would go off for 7 to 10 points at any given amount of time, any particular quarter where he goes nuts, and you can point back And I could be on the show with you guys and we would sit there and talk about, hey, remember this stretch from 7 to 5 minutes in the fourth quarter where Tyrese Maxey was the one who really brought the Sixers home. So I still see that is in there. Unfortunately, we did not see Tyrese Maxey on the floor with Embiid on Tuesday when he came back against OKC. But I do believe that once they do get back on the floor together, it will be like clockwork, because we even saw it with Kyle Lowry, who has never played a minute with Joel Embiid before Tuesday. And those two guys got on the floor. And it was, again, a veteran point guard, knows how to get to the spot, make that pocket pass to the big fella right where he needs it in his comfort zone. And we saw that work a number of times on Tuesday. And I think that will be the case when Maxey does come back.
Here's what I think about what you're saying here and where I disagree a little bit. I don't doubt the talent of those two guys, and I don't even doubt the chemistry between those two guys in sort of the default setting. Here's my belief of the playoffs. There are teams that will throw an adjustment out on a team into the playoffs, and sometimes it takes a full game for you to figure it out. It's like the game happens, you lose, you go to 2 days of practice, and you're like, okay, here's how we're going to beat it, and now we have it solved. There's other teams that maybe it takes a half. You get killed in a first half from a crazy curveball adjustment. You go to halftime and it's like, all right, here's how we break it. And you make that adjustment. And I think the championship teams have the chemistry that you adjust in real time. They just know every single type of defense, every single type of challenge that a team throws at you. Oh, this is what we do in this setting. This is what we do in that setting. And they just go to it. And that's the chemistry that I'm not sure they have yet. And with six games to go and we're almost there. Again, we're not going to know this till the playoffs. They're talented enough to do these things. But if a team throws something at them that's challenging them, are they a team that just dropped game two because, all right, we got to go to the drawing board now and get everybody on the same page?
But that's where we go to the team part of it. If we're talking a two-man game, the talent is there, absolutely, right, for those two. When we're talking team, that's where the question comes in. And that's where we do go back to the Harris point, Oubre, yeah. Buddy Hield in this case, because – when the heel move was made, that was mainly for us, at least as part of the conversation a lot here on the PHLY Sixers show, was he's going to work best with Joel Embiid. That's why he was brought here, to spread the floor, to find those open spots when Embiid faces a double team and the ball sprays around the perimeter and finds him, because of how the defense has now shifted and they're scrambling to get back to him. And that's also with Maxey creating and finding Buddy Hield also. So when we focus on the two, the chemistry, again, I think the chemistry will be there for those two. The question is the rest of the guys, the supporting cast, will it be there for them? Because we know how it goes. For you, Jokic will win you. And I always look at it this way. Superstars are going to win the MVP, the best player, superstars, franchise player, whatever you want to call them. They're going to win you two games by themselves.
Yep.
Then you have to have that second guy, Jamal Murray in this case, or Tyrese Maxey, to win that other. And we're in that fourth win, where you get Aaron Gordon, KCP, Michael Porter Jr., a combined of which one is going to stand out in that one to help the others. And here, is it going to be Harris, Hield, Oubre, someone else that comes through to win you that fourth game, where, yes, when we look at the box score and when we put up the stats of Embiid had 28 and 11 with two blocks and Jokic had the same number, Murray and Maxey had their piece. Who's that third guy that may be right there in the mix where we're talking about, once again, player X did this to help them win this fourth game and get it over the hump? So that's what I think, Adam, at least for this team, especially because the moves that were made, again, Embiid wasn't on the floor. Maxey missed some time. Yeah. So all of them on the floor together. So when you're talking about the chemistry and that trust and being able to get it done in a big spot where the adjustments are made, they haven't been in those spots yet because we haven't, quite frankly, seen it.
Yeah. Let's go to this game on Tuesday, though, against the Thunder. So Embiid, to me, the first thing I notice is whenever guys miss time is just what do they look like physically? And I thought he looked thin. I kind of expected him to look heavier, but I thought he actually looked like he did physically, just looked like he did the last time we saw him.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com.
Well, what else stood out to you about that game, or what was your big takeaway from it?
So his fitness base looked pretty good. You're right. And I'm glad you pointed that out, because having seen him over the course of the weeks where he has been around the team, having been at the arena, he's on the floor. Sometimes he's in his practice gear and you're like, oh, he looks pretty good. He's not, he doesn't look like he's ballooned at all, like right. we have seen in the past. And so that stood out. His mobility looked pretty good. Yeah. Coming off of the injury, of course, the mobility looked good. He's been working out for what they have been allowing him to do. Drew Hanlon, his private workout partner, of course, his trainer, has been here a number of times, working out with him as well as the Sixers coaches and developmental team. And you could see all of that stuff was still really good for him, despite the fact that he has missed so much time. His touch was still there on his jumper. You can also see on the negative side that where only a few times, because I thought he did pretty good in this way, where he wasn't trying to do too much. I thought he kept, I brought this up on the show, I felt like Adam, he kept the basics just that. He kept them the basics. He didn't try to overdo some things. Well, that early charge that he had, you know, he tried to do a little bit too much there. You saw another time, and you know that's how it goes, where you're trying to find your way. You're trying to get your legs back underneath you, trying to figure out what you can actually do in a ball game. And I felt like that he did that just a few times out there on the floor. But for the most part, those things stood out. His defense, I felt like he held back a little bit because guys were getting to the basket and finishing at the rim that they just don't when he's really protecting at the rim the way that Joel Embiid normally does. And that is, again, trying to get his legs back underneath him and get to that comfort zone of knowing that he can do what he normally does and trying to elevate and change a shot, alter a shot, or block that shot. And you saw it later, though, where he felt pretty good, got the strip on, I can't remember who it was for the Thunder, where they were trying to make a move, and he stripped him, went the length of the floor, and got fouled. And that was a really good defensive play there. So I thought it was more positive than negative, especially after having so much time off of the floor, off of his feet, playing in the high level way that we know that he can play, that he looked pretty good in his return. I did point out during our post game coverage that, yeah, let me point out, yes, all these positive things, but a few times I thought he took a few hero shots. He didn't trust himself to throw out of double teams where he didn't handle those well enough. But all of that is just simply because he's just coming back from an injury, and he's seeing an NBA level defense for the first time once again, and against a good defensive team in the Oklahoma City Thunder.
I thought he looked confident, and you're right that some of those things, like the passing out of double team or the time, it was really timing. I would call all those things timing. That's expected. But you see, we've seen guys come back, especially in the last 2 weeks of a season, and you're like, are you rushing back because you have to, or this or that? He looked to me like he was comfortable coming back and felt good about coming back and all those things. So that I think should give Philadelphia fans encouragement. Another thing that should give them encouragement is I think they have the perfect schedule to close the year for a given the circumstance. If you were trying to work in all these new pieces, all these new acquisitions, and bring them back your star player, I think they have the perfect mix of really tough games and super easy ones. So tough one tonight at Miami. That's a good challenge for me because you get to go up against a big, you get to go up against a team that knows what they're doing. It'll be a good test. After that, you've got a bunch of tankers. You've got Memphis, San Antonio, Detroit. You have another one in Orlando that'll be a really tough game. And then you have Brooklyn. So you have four tanking teams, two good teams that are going to be trying. That feels to me like the perfect mix to go like – it feels like a really good tune-up if you're the 76ers.
Yeah, and if you include the seven with OKC, to your point, that was another really good one. Despite Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Jalen Williams not playing, they're still a really good basketball team, and that's how good they are that they can miss their two best players and still play the way that they did. So tonight, game and a half back against Miami. So if you're looking at the seeding purposes, they're tied right now with both Indiana after Indiana's loss to Brooklyn last night. Miami having off last night, but a really good win on Tuesday, where they're game and a half up on the Sixers. They have a 2-1 record against Philadelphia this season. So it's an important tiebreaker for both of them in this game tonight. So not only that, Adam, and just simply playing against a good team, it's a team that you're fighting with to stay out of the sixth seed. And if you are in that play-in of 7-8, that 7-8 game is on your home floor and not in Miami. So this is a really good test. Jimmy Butler looks like he's going to be in already Jimmy Butler playoff mode now. Terry Rozier had a really big game and 32 points on Tuesday. Bam Adebayo, definitely, to your point, poses problems. And their zone also poses problems for the Sixers, others, if you will. Joel typically handles it pretty well. Nick Batum in the middle of that zone, from what we've seen during this season with Nick Batum in the Sixers uniform, he is the best to put in the middle of that zone to handle things at that free throw line, extended to turn and find open teammates cutting, hitting Embiid around the perimeter to get good looks. That's one of the things that I'm also going to watch for tonight, is how they handle that zone, to your point, because of how well they do play against the Philadelphia 76ers. And then, as you mentioned it, while he may not play in these back-to-backs against Memphis and San Antonio, they are very, very winnable if you have a good complement of your players back and he plays in at least one of them. The Orlando piece is important because, Adam, the way that they're playing still, they're fighting to move up into that number three spot. So that's going to be a good test for them there. And the Sixers have played them really well. And then, as you said, Brooklyn, the final home game, the final game of the regular season on your home floor, which could have some, again, meaning to it. So you're absolutely right that the strength of schedule for them worked out perfectly. Now they have to go out there and get these wins. They are sitting on 41, and they cannot look at Indiana and worry about it. They cannot worry about Miami except tonight. Just go out there and do your job and let the chips fall where they may.
I think Adam froze.
Oh, did I freeze? Am I back?
There you go. You're back. You're good.
All right, I'm back. I like the Orlando comment that you made here, because they are a good playoff tune-up. They play a playoff style of defense. They're physical. They're big. They're long. And so for me, you want games like that before going into the postseason that feel a little bit more like what you're going to expect. So that one, I'll be especially keyed into that game, because I think it'll be a very revealing one. All right, let's do this live. We're going to wrap up now. A little segment here sponsored by DraftKings Sportsbook. Again, use code ALLNBA, where we look at the matchups now, both for the play-in and for the playoffs with the 76ers. And Devon, you got to tell me how you feel if you were the 76ers were to meet up here. Let's start with the play-in, because it looks like they're going to be in the play-in. There's a chance they're not two games behind sixth place with six to go. That's tough. It is Miami, so you do have one head-to-head, so you can give yourself some odds here. But if they faced in the first round Miami Heat in the 7-8 matchup for the play-in, how would you feel about that one game series?
All right. Will it be in Miami? Are we going 7-8, 6-8?
Let's just say it's in Miami, since that would be the most likely.
Right. Sure. I do like, with Embiid back, Maxi on the floor, Oubre playing the way that he is playing right now, I do like their chances in that one, whether it's in Miami or Philadelphia, and in this case, Miami, because of you do have the best player on the floor, and even 75 to 80% of Joel Embiid, because of the attention that he's going to draw and how much they have to pay attention to. I'm sure they'll probably start off and man up on him with Bam Adebayo, but once certain things start to happen, because he does get Adebayo in foul trouble and also gets Adebayo in places mentally where you can see it's affecting him, that they're going to have to throw that double team at him. So with that, and having Maxi in a game like this, in this type of setting, having seen him perform in the postseason pretty well and hit those big numbers in some crucial games, just go back to game five of Boston, even though they lost game 6 and 7, game five on the road in Boston, tied 2-2. He dropped 30 in that one against a very good Boston team that really gives him problems. So in this case, I would. And trust me, I'm not a homer in the way that people are like, oh, Devon, you're just from Phil. No, I will say when they will lose a game. In this case, against Miami, I would pick the Sixers.
Will you feel like that one, 55-45, 60-40? Like how confident here?
I would give it 55-45 because I respect playoff Miami.
Yeah,
I do.
Yeah. Especially in a one game. I just feel like a one game playoff against Poe. And then they have the shooters that Miami's one of those teams that every eighth game or so they make 18 threes. And you just go like, all right, well, that was their night tonight. So that's them. All right, let's go to the Pacers.
Pacers are a tough matchup because of the pace that they like to get up and down the floor. They've had the Sixers number this season, and it hasn't been even close in that matchup. But that said, because they are so young in this in this particular space, I would still pick the Sixers. And I think they would learn from that. Rick Carlisle, I respect him. Tyrese Halliburton has been phenomenal all season. I like Aaron Nesmith. I like the role players that they have around him. Miles Turner, though, does get in again when we look at the center position. Miles Turner and any big man that they have out there on the floor against Joel Embiid, foul trouble, foul trouble, foul trouble.
Yep.
And while that has not been the case this season during the regular season, we do know that the postseason again. And I know that they had that midseason tournament and they did what they did there. And it was a fantastic run for them. This is different. And with it, I would still take the Sixers in that matchup, in a one-game matchup.
I think that one, to me, feels the most comfortable there for the reasons you said. That one, to me, I just think Embiid would dominate that specific matchup. You would maybe be able to get up and down the court. I mean, Embiid looked like his conditioning was better than I expected. That's the one advantage Indiana would have, but I feel like that advantage has kind of gone away a little bit since the trade. All right, the Bulls and Hawks. So let's say you lose the first one. You drop the first game of the play-in, and now you're fighting for your lives for the eighth seed, and you play one of the Bulls or Hawks. Are there either of those teams that you look at and say, man, I don't know?
No, I just don't. I don't have much to add to those two because I just do not. Chicago has been a mess all season long. They played well against them a little bit earlier in the season. Kobe White really having that strong push early on that has carried on throughout the season. So good for him and going forward. And DeRozan in a playoff situation is always tough. But everyone else, and yes, Andre Drummond will rebound the heck out of the basketball. But he does also get in foul trouble against Embiid. And Vucevic, you know, not worried there either. When it comes to the Hawks, there's a different thing there when it comes to the Sixers and the Hawks now, Adam, because of 2021.
Where that, right, that's
they
right.
They do not lose to that basketball team, man. And in this spot, whether Trae Young's back, DeJounte Murray is starring in that one. I just don't think that they have enough, again, to knock the Sixers off. So I see them getting in somehow, some way.
All right, let's go now. Because the East standings, there's so much movement that can happen here. Really, any of the top five teams you could see Philadelphia facing. So Boston, if they fall to the eight, Milwaukee, Cleveland, Orlando, New York all have some kind of shot at the two or the three. So let me just, of all those teams, give me the number one team you say that's the best matchup Philadelphia could get.
As far as the 7-8, just if we stay in the play-in, Milwaukee is certainly the best of the two against Boston. They played Boston really well in the postseason last year. James Harden had two phenomenal games, two 40-point games, games 1 and 4. Phenomenal game in game 5 and game 6 and 7. Let's not talk about those. But this season, they did beat them earlier in the year. They played them closely in the second game on the road with no Embiid and no Maxey. You had others who started in that one. But even still, I would say Milwaukee, because Milwaukee just doesn't seem right. And I do believe I'm one that when the trade happens, that when you traded Drew Holiday and you got Damian Lillard, who I'm a big fan of, you really gave up a big part of what they do defensively. Giannis and Lopez are who they are. But on the perimeter, Drew Holiday caused chaos. And Damian Lillard does the opposite. And while he can score in bunches, and we've seen it in the postseason before, I think they can be beaten in a playoff series. So with that one, I would go there. New York poses problems, but this Julius Randle now news out for the remainder of the season does hurt them a bit. Jalen has been phenomenal, all NBA level player. Dante DiVincenzo, we've seen this stuff from these two guys here in Villanova now onto their professional careers. They play hard. They leave it all out on the floor. Very talented. New York will be a problem. Cleveland, not so much, I don't think. Something is still missing with them, and the Sixers have had their number this year, even with Embiid off the floor. They have not beaten Cleveland with Embiid on the floor. They were 2-2 this year. The two wins that they had, Embiid was suffering his injury during that time, rehabbing. And Orlando, I just think they're too young. They'll be fun. There'll be a tough out defensively with Isaac and Suggs, having Franz, his ability to do things that he does. Paolo, again, just busting out here in the second year as one of the better players in the league. They're just not ready, I don't think. But overall, I think the Sixers, I think they, if they can draw a good opponent round one and then let everything else play out in round two, however it does, I think they will be in a pretty good spot, Adam. I really do. Because I don't think the East out of the top two are really as tough as it has been in the past, partly because the Sixers are not in the top three where they're normally in that conversation.
I call it a top one, because I think even Milwaukee right now is scaring me with how they're playing. Sure. They look extremely beatable here. So you're feeling pretty good. This is the last question, then we'll get out of here. In fact, you can cue that outro music, Emma. Do you think the 76ers, let's say they played all three rounds, they go first, second, third round, will they be better in the third round than they are in the first, or better in the first than they would be in the third, regardless of the opponent? Let's just call it like the same opponent.
I think they'll be better because they'll have more games under their belt with Embiid back in the lineup, plus Maxey, plus the additions now. Seven games here to end the regular season, and then whatever number of games they play through play-in, round one, round two, to get to round three, and then maybe even possibly through that third round. So I would say they would be better.
That first round matchup is going to be key for them. Devon, I like that you're feeling confident, man, because that means the East is going to be way more interesting. I'm starting to get worried about the East because all these teams are getting injuries and falling apart. Right. But, you know, you're giving me hope that we might actually get a couple good rounds out of it.
Well, while they're getting their injuries, the Sixers are getting their best guy back from injury.
That's right. That's right, man. Let's do it. He is Devon Givens, PHOY Sixers podcast, after every single game, five shows a week. Devon, thank you so much, man.
Thank you, man. Really appreciate it.
Everybody, we'll be back tomorrow. We'll be covering this Heat 76ers matchup on the show. Hit that like button for us on the way out. We'll see you tomorrow. The mayor.